The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Fred Brack from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting our program for over 10 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And now we return to the February 2020 edition of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. The theme this month is Restoration Restaurants, from food halls to filler-ups. And we're going to continue on that theme with our article, Just What the Doctor Ordered. A group of physicians brings a healthy community spirit to a new restaurant in an old Cabarrus County hosiery mill. Fresh from his residency at East Carolina University's medical school, a young Dr. Alan Dobson, Jr. arrived in Mount Pleasant to take over for the retiring physician who had tended the town's aches and pains for 43 years. Dobson and his wife, Martha, settled into the small community northeast of Charlotte, and in 1983 opened Mount Pleasant Family Physicians. With a reassuring smile beneath his signature mustache, the new doctor, like his predecessor, made house calls, but he also introduced medical advancements into the rural community, like a new X-ray machine, which came in handy during a local football season. We tried to do everything a community would need without having to drive to Charlotte or Concord, Dobson said of his early practice. We tried to make it personal. Now, Dobson is applying the same mission to a new venture, 73 in Maine. The restaurant that he opened with fellow physician Charles Rhodes and physician assistant Tom Earnhardt in December of 2017. The trio bought the historic 1913 building on the corner of North Carolina Highway 73 and Main Street earlier that year, where others had seen bricks and beams long past their prime. The doctor saw good bones in the makings of a new community hub, a place to make people feel good, happy, and well cared for. Dobson likens his new role as an entrepreneur to his long career in medicine. When you get right down to it, both are about serving the community. Or put another way, he says, it's about the personal relationships. Restaurant choices are slim in this town of 1900, where Whataburger No. 13 has been a favorite haunt of locals since 1969. Dobson and his partners knew that the Mount Pleasant area was ready for more adventurous culinary experiences, but the character of their restaurant didn't fully take shape until after the restoration process began. The building speaks to you when you walk through it, Dobson says. You can feel the history. You can feel a connection to this community. When the doctor bought the two-story building in early 2017, it wasn't much to look at. It had been vacant for nearly a decade, and its upper windows were bricked in. Built in 1912 as the Mercantile General Store, the building operated as the Mount Pleasant Hosiery Mill from 1932 until it closed in 2009. At that time, Robin Hayes, a former member of the North Carolina House of Representatives, owned the space, and he donated it to the town in 2016. When Dobson's son Robert heard that Hayes was parting with a landmark, he mentioned to his dad that it would make a good brewery. The three doctors purchased the building from the city, and with the help of an old photo of the Mercantile General Store gleaned from the Eastern Cabarrus Historical Society and Museum, they began resuscitating the structure. Brian Seagraves, who grew up getting his hair cut across the street from the building, put his construction and masonry company to work on the restoration. They soon found some delightful details from the past. The building's dull yellow facade had an original facing that mimics marble. a common building practice in small towns in the early 1900s, used to make structures appear stately. The hardwood floors downstairs were keepers, too, and the original cabinets were refinished to house liquors at the bar and the dining room serving station. A craftsman from Concord rebuilt the massive window casings to the exact specs of the Mercantile General Store. The airy second floor, with its exposed wooden columns and panoramic view of downtown Mount Pleasant, stays booked for weddings, reunions, and parties. During a recent month, a notch in one of those columns triggered a memory on a guest who'd visited the hosiery mill when he was a youngster. He explained to me that that was where the belt-driven machine had been, says Jeanette Klutz, a Mount Pleasant native who serves as the restaurant's event coordinator. It had a big wheel here, and that notch was where the belt ran through the machine. Dobson and his partners knew that memories of the building at the corner of Main Street and North Carolina 73 ran deep in Mount Pleasant, so they kept residents apprised of the renovation, and on Facebook sought their input on menu items. Some wanted a good steak or seafood. Others wanted a place to have a burger and a beer. The result is an ever-shifting menu that reflects classic American tastes. The chef's table in the restaurant kitchen allows guests an up-close view of the action, while the bourbon bar serves vintage and contemporary bourbons, including the award-winning Conviction, made nearby at Southern Grace Distilleries in what used to be the old prison. Dobson and his partners helped bring the distillery to Mount Pleasant, too, by purchasing and renovating the prison. The bar also delivers a front-row view of the restaurant's Old Well Brewery, named for a mid-1800s well discovered below a concrete slab out back. A wall now surrounds the area, but through a plexiglass cover, guests can peer down the restored stone-lined shaft to make coinless wishes. Some of those wishes have surely come true already in Mount Pleasant's gradual downtown reawakening. Dobson notes that the building across the street is being renovated into a coffee shop, bakery, and offices. Ambition is in the air. There's an invisible, unstated community pride, he says. It's reconnected people in the community and brought out stories, pictures, and connections in the past. It's made Mount Pleasant relevant. That's been the most fun part of the journey. Written by Laurie K. Tate, who is a writer, editor, and blogger who lives in Cornelius. 73 and Main is a North Main Street, and I think you know that it's at the corner of 73rd. I assume that's what they mean, 73 and Main. I'm not sure. In Mount Pleasant, 73andMain.com. Big ad on the next page here for Furnish at 8724 Glenwood Avenue in Raleigh. FurnishNC.com, and curious picture, you see a large ottoman and then a brown sofa with brown leather and some pillows, and behind it there's two pictures on the wall. They're waist-up pictures of people, but the one on the right is blindfolded. He's not standing at a post waiting to be executed. He's in front of some wallpaper or something, but completely blindfolded. And the one on the left, you can't see his eyes because all these butterflies are flying around it. Very curious. London on the Pamlico. Farm to Fork Dining gets a posh polish in a historic bank building in Washington, written by Sherry Castle. And this is interesting to me because I just heard about this place the last time I was in the Washington area in a nearby town, Belhaven, and somebody mentioned this, and now I'm going to be able to read about it. A visit to the Hackney feels like seeing a childhood chum who ventured out into the world and now has returned home. More refined and adventurous, perhaps, but still familiar. We know him, but we don't know him quite like this. Washington's new restaurant and gin distillery, located inside a historic stone bank building downtown, merges Southern and British traditions as effortlessly as the Pamlico and Tar Rivers swirl together only a few steps outside the door. Suzanne Hackney Sanders, who owns the Hackney with her British husband Nick, grew up along this nurturing estuary. She knows the region, its food, the importance of a warm welcome. At the start of dinner service, she stations herself at the front desk in the lobby to greet arrivals. This is where she also sits to type the changing menus, which may include local fish roasted whole, beef Wellington, or traditional sticky toffee pudding. Here, local North Carolina flavors are buttoned up in British finery. The restaurant's culinary perspective is a reflection of the couple's own story. Suzanne met Nick on Franklin Street in Chapel Hill while both were attending business school at the University of North Carolina in the early 1990s. After they married and lived abroad, mostly in England and France, and pursued careers in multinational businesses, when their two children decided to attend colleges back in the USA, Suzanne and Nick began pondering a return to the States as well. But Suzanne was pointedly clear that if they did move, the only place she'd consider living was her hometown of Washington. "I wanted to make a new home back on the river, on the water," she says. "River life shapes our lifestyle, our architecture, and our heritage. I missed the light and the sun. I wanted to come back and relive that." Nick was game for a change of pace and return, in a sense, to where their partnership began. "This place is a statement about us, about our pasts and our personal histories in London and in the American South," he says. Although he's involved in nearly every role in the restaurant, there's a notable twinkle in Nick's eye and a lilt in his voice when he's chatting with guests, moving between tables and checking on those at the bar, ensuring that everyone is well tended. On a busy night, the place crackles with a cheery energy that, as Nick says, melds big city vibrancy with hometown hospitality. When the Sanderses stepped inside the empty neoclassical building on the corner of West Main and North Respa Streets in August of 2016, it was love at first sight. Standing in the vast, stately space that once held a bank on the first floor, assorted offices above, and a radio station on the top floor, the couple began to envision a distillery, a restaurant, and a boutique hotel, a variation on the very British concept of restaurant with rooms that they had admired during their life abroad. But such an ambitious project required a wise and efficient approach. They settled on a plan to restore the space while simultaneously opening the business in three stages, starting with a fine dining restaurant, the Hackney, in January 2019. The restoration of the building is part of a larger revitalization movement taking root in downtown Washington, which is funded through private and public investments, including grants from local organizations. The Hackney's 1922 building was designed by Wilson-based architects Benton and Benton, who were known for creating banks and other municipal buildings in the area. With guidance from Preservation North Carolina, Nick and Suzanne have undertaken the work as deliberately and attentively as possible. Their aim is to reveal and refurbish architectural features and to make improvements, not replacements, wherever possible. The restored marble floors in the foyer flow into polished pinewood inlay, just as they did when the teller line delineated the space between the Tony lobby, where the customers stood, and the serviceable areas where employees worked. The marble that was needed to restore the lobby floor to its original splendor came from Florence, Italy. So far, the Sanderses have invested more than $1 million in restoration work and furnishings, much of it bespoke and North Carolina-made. Six enormous crystal chandeliers drop from the two-story vaulted coffered ceilings that's edged with dentil moldings and detailed millwork. A glamorous two-sided banquette fills the middle of the room, serving as seating for small tables. Lamps dot the long banquette and the bar, casting the room in a kind of full moon glow that's both bright and soft. The 13-seat bar runs down one side of the room with bottle-filled shelves across a soaring mirrored wall that reflects the light. Nick worked for weeks with an acoustic engineer to ensure the room's design worked well for both intimate conversations and festive gatherings. But the back of the restaurant is, in many ways, the real star. Here, a ponderous old vault door with visible cogs and levers that once locked away cash now serves as a portal to the kitchen. Chef Jamie Davis, born and raised in Jacksonville, works with the Sanderses to create a fine dining menu with a British sensibility, emphasizing local seasonal ingredients. The menu changes every few weeks to keep the farm-to-table journey as short as possible, but Davis adds, we will always have a great steak and plenty of oysters. Davis credits the success of his dishes to his relationships with local farmers, fishermen, and purveyors. You can taste the flavor of immediacy, he says. Printed prominently in the top right corner of each menu are the names of the four local farms that provide the majority of the Hackney's fresh produce. Deep Roots Farm, Lochavor Market Gardens, Southside Farms, and Beaufort County Organics. The origins of the beef and seafood appear in recipe titles and descriptions. Relationships with fishermen who call me as they pull into the dock help me push the boundaries of what I can put on our plates, Davis says, and I hope that the lady over in Castilla will keep raising all the chickens and turkeys I need. He ticks through a list of purveyors. Oh, he says, trying to squeeze in one more name. And Aunt Shellam's shellfish can't be beat. Or rather, Anna Shellman's shellfish. The same can be said of the Hackney's two happenings, as the British say, on Sundays. One is a proper afternoon roast featuring two entrees, such as beef Wellington, roast beef with Yorkshire pudding, or a clever roast that is less typically British, such as Italian porchetta made from North Carolina pork. The other is a classic afternoon tea, including house-made savories and cakes, accompanied by hot tea or cold flutes of something bubbly. Ever the Englishman, Nick prefers a distinctive tipple. When it comes to spirits, nothing is more quintessentially London than gin, he says. It's our thing, our house spirit. Gin is the most culinary spirit, too, thanks to its nuanced infusion of spices and botanicals. That complexity has always appealed to the Sanderses, who have enjoyed gins from around the world and even tinkered with a recipe in their home kitchen. So adding a gin distillery and tasting room to the restaurant was a must. While the bar offers a range of cocktails and a rotating selection of craft beers, guests will no doubt be tempted by the enormous, gleaming, German-made still that anchors the distillery, a room unto itself behind the dining room bar. The English know gin, Nick explains, but the Germans make perfectly engineered stills. Southerners, meanwhile, know the power of place. The Sanders's gin is named 1,000 Piers, a tribute to Suzanne's beloved Pamlico waterfront. Now that the distillery and restaurant are open, the Sanders's are turning their attention to the next phase, 14 elegant guest rooms on the building's two upper floors. Suzanne is busy planning. As with the restaurant, the fabrics, furnishings, and decorative touches will be sourced from North Carolina as much as possible. But creative inspiration will flow from across the pond, too. We've nodded to the history of this place, Nick says. This is a space of stature, and it drives us to be special. For Suzanne, that means delighting in every detail, from the new fabrics and furniture to restoring and revealing special features that echo into the past. Details matter, she says. Details distinguish us. Details gratify us. Sherry Castle was the writer. The Hackney is located West Main Street, right on the waterfront in Washington, North Carolina. The Hackney, Washington, N.C. is their address. And you're listening to Our State Magazine on the North Carolina Reading Service. If you have any comments on our program, please call the studios 919-832-5138. We have about 10 minutes left, and now we're going to do a tour of tastes at the junction of sweet and savory, east and west, is the Food Hall, a local food court reimagined into a deliciously diverse gathering place. That tornado really did a number on the place. Half of the roof was gone, says Nick Neptune, pointing to the rafters of Transfer Company, the food hall in southeast Raleigh that he manages. A few years and a gut-wrenching remodel later, this former transfer hub for bus lines draws a robust crowd from lunchtime through dinner. Today, a knot of high school kids have walked over for ice cream and burritos. Coffee meetings are two cups in and counting. Laptops share space with plates of fried drum collars and huge messy burgers. Later, the after-work oysters and beer folks arrive. The scene around the communal tables is diverse as the menus on display, which include Italian flatbreads, Argentine empanadas, Mumbai street food, Korean spare ribs, and more. Community is what we're all about, says Neptune, who, along with co-owner and developer Jason Queen, envisioned this 16,000-square-foot space as a reflection of the vibrant and ever-changing city they love. Transfer Company is an ideal model for what the food hall movement is all about, giving local chefs and food vendors a place to shine in a spacious, repurposed building. A neighborhood gets a new gathering place, and diners get a taste of the world under one roof. And sometimes that comes with a side of spectacle, too. You can see the bagels being made, the seafood being cut, Queen says. We have a butcher. We have freshly made pasta. Variety is the hallmark of food halls and a key to their growing popularity. Charlotte is, too. The newest Optimist Hall has made the Dumpling Lady a destination and mason jars filled with mango slushies photo-worthy. Besides the food halls in Charlotte and Raleigh, at least five more are on the horizon from Asheville to Selma. It's a trend in eating that I don't think is going away, says Nihil Hanley, owner of Morgan Street Food Hall, also in downtown Raleigh. For younger generations, choice is the big thing. Food halls scratch that immediate itch. It's where you can Instagram about it, eat, and go. Often housed in historic structures and remodeled to industrial chic perfection, the spaces themselves are part of the appeal. Morgan Street Food Hall opened in what used to be a warehouse for a construction company. Its former loading dock is now a bar and a patio. Over in Chapel Hill, Blue Dogwood Public Market opened in what was once Fowler's Food Store, one of the town's first supermarkets. Transfer Company opened in the spring of 2019 in the former Carolina Coach Garage and Shop. Queen, who had previously worked in his historic preservation and lives a few blocks away, was awed by the building's patinaed concrete floor, soaring steel trusses, and angular roofline. Turning it into offices or apartments wouldn't allow as many people to see the original beauty. So he and the building's two other owners settled on a food hall concept. The height of the stall ceilings are set to historic preservation standards, so customers can still appreciate the historic architecture. As Queen puts it, you kind of let the building tell you what it wants to be. If you look closely at Optimist Hall, its history is detail in the hidings. For more than 100 years, it was one of many mills that helped make Charlotte the center of the South's textile industry in the early 1900s. For almost 80 years, this landmark was part of Highland Park Gingham Mills, the country's third largest gingham manufacturer. Now, spindleback chairs dot the dining areas. The pale green walls are reminiscent of a bolt of mint-colored gingham. The building is even anchored on one end by the Spindle Bar, which serves drinks with names like By the Yard and Threads of Fate that celebrate the building's previous incarnation. The connoisseurs of soap dumplings may not even have been born when the looms here were going full speed, but in giving this building a new purpose, the food hall is honoring the neighborhood's past. It's putting a little bit of Charlotte's history on the map, says Eric Johnson, co-owner of White Point Partners, which bought the 12-acre property in 2016 in a joint venture with Paces Properties and opened the food hall in August. We're paying homage to the entrepreneurial spirit was there when it was a textile business. For entrepreneurial chefs, food halls are the next step in the evolution of food trucks, which have brought eclectic offerings to towns big and small. A whole rodeo of food trucks in a parking lot or in a park or along a downtown street has become an event in itself, corralling the ambition and creativity of those mobile restaurants into one shared space, indoors and with customer parking, is the genius of the food hall model. Like many of their food truck compatriots, the chefs who sell burgers, tacos, or curries in those shared spaces are often first-time business owners. The food hall gives them a chance to lean on each other for support, ideas, and collaboration. It's sort of like a startup hub, Queed says. While the food hall operators manage the building, security, and cleaning of the common areas, the entrepreneurs can focus on the dishes they serve. This was the impetus behind the state's first food hall, 7th Street Public Market, which opened in Charlotte in 2011. Manager Chris Clowden explains that the nonprofit food hall was intended as a small business incubator with a focus on celebrating the city's food culture. Clowden and his team offer educational programming on topics including labor and employment law, marketing, and small business financing. 30 businesses have come through the space, and a few are expanding to several locations, including Pure Pizza, 2 locations, Hazelnut Creperie, 4, and Not Just Coffee, 6. Clowden advises the folks who run food halls that their main job is to provide a welcoming space for businesses and diners. How they do that often reflects their locations. Raleigh Transfer Company is located near several schools and has hosted PTA board meetings and fundraisers. Blue Dogwood aims to support the type of family-owned businesses that used to thrive on Chapel Hill's Franklin Street. Sarah Boak, a partner in Blue Dogwood, says that her team recruited chefs in that mold, and they discovered that many had started their businesses because they couldn't find anyone else in the area making Persian food, say, or Latin-inspired vegan dishes. I didn't realize how much that vision would resonate with our customers. Food halls may have a loftier purpose, too. In an area, or rather era, when too many of us are attached to our devices, even at mealtimes, the communal tables and bustling atmosphere of a food hall inspires interaction and connection. Original architectural details like honey-hued heart pine floors and rustic brick walls create an inviting atmosphere. And an eclectic selection of specialties means that everyone can have whatever they're craving, plus a bite of newfangled thing a friend just ordered while seated at the same table. Adair Mueller, owner of Durham Food Hall, which is set to open this winter on the site of a tobacco auction warehouse, designated the dining areas to encourage conversation, or rather designed them that way. Her favorite spot is a Z-shaped dining table that will seat 35 people. It's a place where you can go and get physically interactive with people, Mueller says. You might sit down as strangers and leave as friends. Written by Andrea Weekly. Blue Dogwood Public Market is on West Franklin Street in Chapel Hill. You can find them at bluedogwood.com. Durham Food Hall, durhamfoodhall.com. Morgan Street Food Hall, morganfoodhall.com. Optimist Hall, you got it, optimisthall.com. 7th Street Public Market, 7thstreetpublicmarket.com. And Transfer Company Food Hall, what do you think? Transfer Company at CO Food Hall. Well, that's all the time we have for this week's episode of our State Magazine. Hope you enjoyed it. You'll join us next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of our State Magazine was underwritten, as it always is, by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Comments, questions, call the studios 919-832-5138. So long for now.